free. Right.
You're so demanding.
I know, I am. I am demanding. We'll talk about that this episode. 4, 3, 2, 1. You are listening to episode of the Punk News Podcast, 612. John's back from space, back from Neptune. I had a wild time. Let's talk about it. Let's roll. Welcome back to Earth. First of all, we're here with Sammy B. 2 weeks in a row. Sammy B on the show.
Yeah, I have no idea what happened. I think I was probably abducted by aliens, maybe. Hence why I'm still here.
So, wait, are you you or are you a replicant of the real you?
Maybe I'm a clone.
Oh, maybe. Maybe you're a clone, but you don't know you're a clone.
Yeah, this might be like one of those like weird sci-fi TV show moments where there's like five of me. That's probably not good for my husband.
If you found, or it might be real good for your husband. Oh, I see. Like he's got five wives to deal with instead of one. At any rate, like if you found out that you were a clone, would you be like broken and like shattered, or would you be like, eh, whatever? You know, like that never happens in the movie. The clone's never like, eh, whatever. You know,
I think I might be like, eh, whatever, because it's like, okay, well, there's another me. Maybe they're having a better time or living a fabulous life or worse off than I am. So we'll see.
And I'll
collect the clones.
Well, Sam's collecting clones. And more, have you ever considered the possibility that you are either of all the infinite realities near the worst reality or near the best reality? Have you ever considered that, and more?
I've thought about it, and then it's just like, I'll think like, oh, cool, like things are going really well, everything's in the right, like the right zone, and then like something just like awful will happen, and they'll be like, I'm in the worst timeline, why is this happening? So it's just like everything like just swings. It would be really cool to see like other M's in different timelines and see what they're up to, because that would be really fun. And it would be so cool to like meet your clone, because then you have a friend who like knows everything about you and likes the same things you like, so you can go watch like movies and stuff.
Hallie Bullet, if you met your clone, do you think you would get along or would you hate each other?
If I met my clone. Yeah, no, I think we'd vibe, man. Wait, what? Why did that get zero response? Did I not answer the question?
No, I think you answered it too directly. Like, I think we were expecting like a long-winded soliloquy, and you were like, we would get along.
I don't have anything profound to say about it. I'm sorry. I think we'd get along.
Well, that's fine. Listen, not everything. Honestly, if every response a person gives is a quote profound response, it probably means you're being pretentious and you're not nearly as smart as you think you are. Speaking of which, I'm back from Neptune. And man, it was a time. And actually, I brought with me Wizzix from the planet Neptune. Wizzix, what's happening? Meep, mo, meep, meep, mo.
No.
Let me tell you, man. Wizzix and I had a ball on Neptune. It was weird. I listened to last week's episode, and for some reason, they were talking about strip clubs a lot. Let me tell you, I know Hallie Bullet thinks she's cool, and she's like, I like going to strip clubs as long as the women are being treated fairly. Let me tell you, Earth strip clubs have got nothing on Neptunian strip clubs. You have not experienced a lap dance until you've gotten one in 0G. Ain't that right, Wizzix? Meep, mo, meep, meep, mo, meep, mo. Man, look, Wizzix, how about the Neptunian girl with the meep, mo, meep, mo? Man, that was crazy. Meep, meep, mo, meep. Wizzix. Wizix, you are too much. Wizix, man, don't say that. You want to get us canceled or whatever. Where are all the Earth bitches at? Wizix, we do not refer to women as bitches here on Earth. Wizix, I'm going to have to throw you off the show. Click. Sorry, girl. Listen. These Neptunians, they're cool, but they get out of control. You know what I mean? So, anyway, well, I'm back from Neptune. I had a blast. So it was the low budget reunion show last weekend. And I'm going to make this as brief as possible. Overall, it was a great time. But what's interesting about every show is every show that I've ever thrown, and I think this is pretty much true for everyone, every show has its own unique, I guess, theme or attribute. This one was pretty cool because the Low Budgets reached out to me. In case you don't know, the Low Budgets are the band formed by Chris Peelout and Joe Jack Talcum roughly after the end of the Dead Milkmen. It's not necessarily a successor band of the Dead Milkmen, but it's kind of a spinoff band. But also, it's not strictly a Joe Jack Talcum band. It very much is Chris Peelout and Joe Jack Talcum and Dandrew Stevens. It really is a separate band that kind of, I guess, shot off from the Dead Milkmen. And it's kind of a different style band, too, although it's punk and funny, kind of like the Dead Milkmen as well. So anyway, they reached out to me and they said, will you do a reunion show for our first show in 7 years? And I was absolutely blown away and super pumped about it. And so it seemed to me that it was very important and very special to them. It wasn't just a gig. So I wanted to make it like extra special. So I said, what can I do to make this show extra, extra special? And so I did one of the things I always do is I made I asked all the bands, do you want a limited edition cassette that you can sell at the show? And I'll just give them to you and you can sell them for whatever you want. So Low Budget said yes. Froggy said yes. And Crazy in the Brain said yes. And then I said, what else can I do? I decided between the bands we'll play The Price is Wrong, which is literally just The Price is Right, but the audience will bid on used records and that kind of a thing. And the grand prize will be something really cool. And then I said, also, I'll make little coupon books because it's low budgets. So when people come in, instead of getting a program like they usually do at like summer soirees, we'll get a coupon book that has different coupons in it. Some of the coupons were like 10% off Sit and Spin Records. Another coupon was get a free selfie with Chris Peelout. Additional selfies, $49.95. And another coupon was if you buy the low budgets demo tape that we were selling, then you also get a free crafts kit from the 60s, which kind of played off. The low budgets have the song called Craft Fair. So I thought it would be funny that you could actually get a craft kit if you buy the cassette tape, which I thought was cool. So anyways, as the people know, about 2 weeks ago, I was freaking out basically because everyone, and I was pretty harsh. All the bands except for the Low Budgets wanted to do their own thing and didn't want to share gear and really, really just said, we want to do what we want to do. We don't care about the convenience or sound man or time slot. And I was honestly really, really, really frustrated. But also, my frustration was elevated because even though I had promised to do The Price is Right, I hadn't built any of the stage sets. So literally, with 1 week to go, I started building the stage sets. I built a Punch-Out, which is a game where in The Price is Right where you like reach through like the paper to like see if there's a winner on the other side. But I called it Crowd Killer, so you could win punches and punch the thing. We had Don't Fall Off the Mountain, which is where the little alpine guy climbs up the mountain and you have to guess three things within $25. Except for this time, it was Don't Mosh Off the Mountain. And it was a little that march up the mountain instead of an alpine guy. And the third game was Plinko, except for it wasn't Plinko. Well, I brought it out and I'll talk about it in a second. Well, I'll talk about it. And then we had the Showcase Showdown. I was going to build a wheel, you know, the wheel they have on prices, right? And I went to Home Depot and they actually had tabletops for $100 each. And I was going to buy two giant tabletops and like some wooden dowels and nail them together and build like an actual functioning wheel. But I thought, that's you've already spent like almost $200 on supplies. Like, I don't know if it's really worth that much effort, you know? And I'm thinking, I don't know if I can really justify it. So I didn't build the wheel. And I'm like, man, I should have built the wheel. So anyways, with regards to the back line, Hallie's like, well, John, why do you even take this on? And Hallie was, I think Hallie's right in that, like, Well, actually, I think Hallie's right in New York, but I think she's wrong in Philadelphia. Because as I did last time, remember last time I had almost the same exact issue. I was like, fine, you guys sort it out. Not my problem. Well, of course, 2 days before the show, it was John's problem again. All the bands were like, can we have a bass amp? Can we have drums? Well, not all the bands, because the opening band was special, and they didn't want to share the gear with anybody. You know. So anyways, what I did is, Ginger Knight was running my door. Ginger Knight of we used to be of Drew Guest, but now of Riverside Odds. She's working my door, and I love having Ginger work the door because she's really good at it. And actually, I got another thing to talk about too. So I said, Ginger, can I rent your set for $150? And Ginger likes money, as do I. So she said yes. And so I said to all the bands, we've got a drum set. You got to bring everything else. If you want to share your bass and guitar amp, then you can do that. You know, but I'm bringing drums. And so I'm like, fine, settled. But the meanwhile, the show sold out before the gig, which I was thrilled about. I was so happy about. I was happy for me because, I mean, I actually wasn't risking that much money because the headline band came to me. So I was able to structure it so that I wasn't risking that much no matter what happened. But the only reason I'm telling you this is just because I mean, do you guys think that it's interesting to hear what goes behind the scenes on planning a show, or is that boring to people?
Interesting.
Right. So fair enough. So anyways, so I usually give all the bands just a flat guarantee, but this one I was able to structure because the bands came to me, so I had a little bit more leverage. The headlining band came to me. So anyways, so it was sold out, and then someone requested permission to post on the Facebook. They said, I can't come because I've got COVID. I'm just going to give away my two tickets. So normally it's a bad idea to let people do that, A, because there's scammers out there. B, because it makes things weird at the door. C, sometimes the person says they're not going to come and they come, but the other person comes too. But I said, well, it's a sold out show. It's a, you know, it's a once in every 7 years thing. I'll be a nice guy and I'll let them give away their tickets. So I clicked allow. Within 2 minutes, who asked for the free tickets from the person but my least favorite person in the Philadelphia punk scene? And I'll tell this story some other time. The person that literally tried to undermine my Danbert show by trying to book Danbert the day before I had him in Philadelphia. I'm thinking the audacity of this guy. You know, like I really can't say. I mean, not this. It's Mr. Support the Scene, and this is the guy that tried to book Danbert under me when I already had him booked and had put up money and I'll tell the story some other time. I'm like, the audacity. I mean, this guy could buy a ticket. You know, I know who this guy is. And so I was actually over my parents' house, but I couldn't delete the comment from my cell phone. So I jumped in my car and I sped home. I ran to my laptop and I deleted the comment. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm like anybody but this guy. I don't want this guy at my show. You know what I mean? If he bought a ticket, I'd be like, fine. But just because he's so sleazy, he's trying to get in for free when he could have bought a ticket, you know. I'm like, ah. So anyways, I deleted it. And then day of the show, I said to Ginger, I'm like, well, if this guy tries to get in, you know, you can charge him $16, but don't let him in for free if you're comfortable doing that. And Ginger's pretty tough. So Ginger's like, I'll take care of it, John. I'm like, that's why I pay you the big bucks, Ginger. So anyways, day of the show rolls around. My sound man was sound man Justin at Philomoka, and I love Philomoka, my favorite venue in the city, bar none. Justin is one of my favorite sound men. He's extremely professional. He's extremely good at what he does, and he treats it very, very seriously. Very seriously. So I could tell that he was a little rattled because we had four bands playing, and they all had different back lines, and we're doing the game show between your thing. And I'm like, listen, man, don't worry about the game. It doesn't matter if it sounds crappy, you know, just a dopey game show. But he like really wanted the mic to sound good for the game show. So anyways, showtime comes around. There's about maybe 90 people, 100 people there for the first band, which is like really good. And so then me and Carabo get up there, and Carabo's my Rod Roddy. And I had a script for Carabo. And so Carabo's supposed to be, welcome back to the world famous Price is Wrong. And basically when people came in, I had them fill out a contestant entry form, and they put it in a bucket. And then basically before each round, I would draw the names out of the bucket. So like if Steve Smith came, he would write his name on a slip, put it in the bucket. And so then I draw four names: Steve Smith, Sarah Jones, Bill Michaels, and I don't know, Ellie Frankfurt, you know. And so then I gave him the Carabo. I'm like, so read these names. But I think Carabo was like really, really, really excited. And so instead of being like, Sarah Smith, come on down, he was like, Sarah Smith, where are you at? And then he was like, Bill Frankfurt, in the house, where is it? was is though, honestly, I totally miscalculated and I totally misfired. In that summer soiree, it was people 18 to 20. Average age, probably 21, 22. Median age, probably 18, 19, 17. Those people were there to have fun. When I, you know, with summer soiree 5, when I was like, when I say hey, you say ho. When I say hey, you say ho. Hey, they all went ho. So, hey, so, but this audience, I totally miscalculated. This audience was much, much, much older. They were actually older than I thought they were going to be. I thought they were going to be about my age. They were like 50, 55, maybe 45. The average audience age was about 45. So Carabo and I get up there, and Carabo was like, Sarah Smith, where are you at? And she, Sarah Smith did not come down. Bill Jones, where are you at? Bill Jones did not come down. Finally, we got two people to come on down to the stage. The first person, like, we had, like, little Price is Right pricing, like, stands, you know? The first person, like, apparently had never seen Price is Right, so they're, like, climbing up on the stage. I'm like, no, no, stand behind the pricing, you know, the price thing. The other guy kind of got it, and he was, like, really excited, and he's, like, hugging me, like, they hug Bob Barker and stuff, and he's, like, slapping people five. But I looked out to the audience just was not having it. They were not there to play Price is Right. They were staring at us like we were zombies. And so we did the first round, and the guy got to play Crowd Killer, which we, and so he actually got the right box in the first thing, and he's like dancing around. I gave him the prize. He's like going hooray, hooray! You know, I love Price is Wrong, and it was crickets out there. The audience just stood there. They were not there to have fun. It was pretty rough, you know. So anyways, meanwhile, the first band was demanded they had to use their own kit. They were an hour and a half late. So my sound man is totally, like, just totally, you know, on edge, you know. So they played, but honestly, they were actually really, really good. And I like them. I was just really annoyed that they demanded to use their own set and that they were late. Yeah, that was really annoying to me. But they played. They were great. So I say to Carabo, all right, so what we're going to do is if people don't come on down, just read the name. And if they don't come on down, come on to the next one. But I think Carabo was still really hyped up. So he'd be like, you know, Mike Osborne, come on down. And then Mike Osborne was not, he was like outside smoking or something. And he'd be like, Mike, where are you? You know, Mike, come on, we need you. And I'm thinking to myself, no, just go to the next, like it was brutal, you know. So finally we got like two people to come on down, you know. And then we played Don't Fall Off the Mountain. Oh, but actually here was, oh, actually I forgot this one part. Before the show, Carabo says to me, I'm not going to name the guy, but he's like, hey, John, this troll that used to bother you is going to come to the show, and I don't want you to start any trouble. And I'm thinking, I don't even know who you're talking about, really. I'm really busy. I'm not going to start a trouble with troll. Like, yeah, I'm too busy, Frank. You know what I mean? And what was funny is literally about 6 or 7 years ago, Carabo said to me, hey, here's my friend. We'll call him Charlie. And he didn't know that Charlie was the guy that had, like, was going around the internet saying that I raped and killed his wife. I'm going to point out, I've never raped and killed anybody, but he thought it was funny to go on all these websites and say I raped and killed his wife. And I said to Charlie, I'm like, that is really not cool for you to do that. And like, Carabo was mortified because like, he thought we were going to be pals. And like, this is a guy that's been like dissing me for years. You know what I mean? And so the guy didn't really fight back, but I think he was shocked that I was there. This was like 7 years ago, right? At a World Inferno show. So anyway, that same guy was there and Carabo was like, so-and-so is going to come. And I'm like, I don't care, man. I don't have time to worry about this guy. You know, and so basically on the second round, like no one was coming down and I saw Charlie and I'm thinking, you know what? I'm totally just going to like smooth this over. I'm like, Charlie, come on down. And what I didn't know is that his wife or his girlfriend was also already on the stage. And so Charlie came up on the stage and his wife was there and his wife ended up winning and it was cool. And she won the prize and she was actually really, really happy that she won. And I was actually like really happy because she, unlike the vast majority of the audience, she was really there to have fun and got the joke. Like the audience was without question the stiffest audience I've ever been in front of ever. So then Froggy comes out. Froggy totally rocked, but honestly, the audience just wasn't into it. And I shouldn't say this, but I hated the audience. I'm like, Froggy is killing it. And you are just standing there like drinking and smoking and like you don't care at all. I'm like, this, like you all realize the headlining band asked them to be here. Like the headlining band liked this band. And they just, like, stood there and didn't give a shit, you know? And so on the third round, I brought out Plinko, and I got up there, and this one was the worst one. We had to call, like, 15 people before I could get two people to come play Plinko. I was pointing at people in the audience. I'm like, come on down. And they wouldn't come on down. They would, like, shake their head and, like, look off. And I'm like, it's supposed to be silly and fun. Like, I don't know why this is such a problem, you know? And, like, I thought about abandoning it, but I'm like, you know what? I'm already halfway through. I'm going to prove this to myself, if anybody, you know. So anyways, I pull out the Plinko board, and I say, so someone won that round. I'm like, okay, you're going to play Plinko, but you're not playing Plinko. It's Punko. And I took a magic marker and changed Plinko to Punko. Total crickets. Total crickets, you know. So anyway, the person got up there, and they played Plinko, and I just let them win on the first one. I'm like, you win. You know, I'm like so exhausted, you know. So then Crazy in the Brains come out. Crazy in the Brains are rocking it, totally rocking it. It's a packed crowd. They're standing there, and I'm like, oh, my God, I've never not seen Crazy in the Brains totally rock an audience. About two-thirds of the way through the set, Crazy in the Brains finally broke the audience, and the audience started rocking. You know it's a stiff crowd when it takes Crazy in the Brains two-thirds of a set to get them rocking. But Crazy in the Brains were awesome. It's, quote, new Crazy in the Brains, which is Chris Ernest, Ali from Stop the Presses, and two new guys. And the band doesn't have a xylophone anymore. Now they got a keyboard. A little bit of a different vibe, but they were rocking. And honestly, it was awesome. And they sounded great. Finally, we had the final round. For the final round is the Showcase Showdown. And I was supposed to have three people for the Showcase Showdown instead of two because I had three winners. Of my three winners, how many people do you think came to the Showcase Showdown?
One.
And the grand prize was a hand-drawn, actually a painting by Joe Jack Talcum, which is a pretty cool prize.
Well, dude.
And so the person that came down was Charlie's girlfriend or Charlie's wife, which honestly I was very happy about because she seemed to get it. So I was actually like really happy that she came down. And so with the Showcase Showdown, they're supposed to guess what the value was. What do you guys think I had the value of at the painting, you know, like that they can't see? What do you think I had the value set at?
$1 million.
$5,000.
Priceless, right? So that was the joke. The most, guess what Charlie's girlfriend or wife bid?
$50.
Priceless. And I'm like,
no way!
So I gave the painting, honestly, I was really, really happy because she was absolutely thrilled with it. And I was so happy that, like, if just some jackass got it, I would be so annoyed, you know. But she was so happy to get it. So I was, like, honestly, out of 175 people there, she was probably the most deserving to win it, which was pretty cool, honestly, even though the crowd was just stiff. I mean, they were stiff. I feel like Ronnie Dangerfield. How stiff were they? They were so stiff. So anyways, oh, I got a joke there, but I'm not going to say it. So anyway, the Low Budgets come out, and the Low Budgets just kick into it, and the Low Budgets rock. As soon as the Low Budgets started rocking, the crowd went insane, absolutely insane. They were just there to see the Low Budgets, and the Low Budgets sounded so good. Like, they sounded way better than they were going to sound. They sounded amazing. Interesting, people were stage diving, which is all right. I mean, that's kind of – I mean, at that size venue, it was kind of not cool, but because people were so excited to see me, it was all right, you know. Joe Jack Talcum was the most animated and having the most fun I've ever seen him have ever. He was, like, dancing. He was, like, striking poses. He was, like, jumping up and down. On stage, if you've seen Joe Jack Talcum, he just kind of stands there and smiles. I don't know if when he plays in Low Budget, he's a different character or something, or he really was having more fun than he usually had. Like, I could not believe how much fun Joe Jack Talcum was having, and I was having fun. Anyway, they sounded absolutely fantastic. At the last song, I threw a whole bunch of balloons on the crowd, probably 300 balloons. Every single balloon except for three just sank to the ground, and people did not want to walk around. And I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, I've never had this happen. Honestly, after Summer Soiree 5 and all the Summer Soirees, I'm thinking about, I'm the party king. I know how to throw a party. I made it rain at Summer Soiree 5. At Summer Soiree 2, when SZA Crack was playing, I threw balloons on people. They were throwing them around and putting themselves on each other's shoulder. At Summer Soiree 1, people were jumping off the balcony. I'm the party king. At this one, people were not there to party with John, let me tell you. So it was rough. So anyways, but they totally rocked out for Low Budgets, although actually they almost rocked out too hard. It was kind of – I miscalculated in that there was almost kind of a scuffle between two people, which I've never had at a show happen ever. And honestly, the reason was is because they were older, they were drinking more, and honestly, they were grouchier. I remember when I saw the Rolling Stones last time, the crowd was much older. And that parking lot was the craziest, most not cool parking lot I've ever seen. People like speeding towards pedestrians, people cutting in front of each other, people running red lights, people going the wrong way down the street, people driving on the sidewalk. This was for the Rolling Stones. And the reason was because the audience was a much older crowd, and they were tired, and they wanted to get home, and they were grouchy. It was not cool. This gig sort of had that vibe at the end, that like people were getting kind of pushy. You know, it was getting a little gnarly, but the band totally rocked and people had a lot of fun for the low budget, which is the goal. So anyway, the low budget killed it. It was awesome. After the gig was over, do you guys think? Let me throw an example. With Summer Soiree 5, I'll say the dirtiness out of 10 of the venue was about a 5. Summer Soiree 3, which is World Inferno and Joe Jack Talcum and some other people, the dirtiness was about a 3 out of a 10. What do you guys think the venue dirtiness was after this gig?
8.
9 out of 10. There was so many crushed, like, beer bottles, beer cans all over the ground. Like, there's a trash can right there, or a recycle bin right there. I probably picked up probably about 300 cans. The bathroom was just destroyed. I cleaned up the bathroom. I mean, I was cleaning up for about an hour and a half, 2 hours. Like there was just trash all over. People just threw stuff on the ground. And it was like, I'm thinking, like, this is the only all-ages rock venue left in the city. I mean, there's coffee houses and stuff, but not rock venues. And why would you try? This is the only one we got left. It's not a bar. It's a nice, clean place with a high ceiling. And people just totally trashed it. So I love the bands. The bands were great. Oh, as a side note, is my sound man was totally freaking out because he was too. Meanwhile, the opening band lied to me. It's not that they didn't want to share their gear. They didn't want to share their gear with the other two bands. They did share their drum kit with the low budgets. But I think the low budgets didn't know. My sound man was really annoyed because the first band set up the drum kit. We took it down. We put up Ginger's drum kit. Then the low budgets took back down Ginger's drum kit and put up the first drum kit when the low budgets could have just used Ginger's drum kit. And I know their drummer, Brian Michael, he's a good guy. He doesn't give a shit. He'll play, oatmeal boxes. You know what I mean? Like, I think because they had worked it out ahead of time and the first band lied to me, I think that's, like, where that confusion came from. And it all worked out in the end, but it was kind of needlessly complex and my sound man was a little ragged. Oh, and then after the show was over, I was reminded – after the show was over, Philomoka, the guys that run it, they're like, yeah, man, great gig. That was a lot of fun. I remember with Summer Soiree 1, after it was over, like, that show was pretty – it was nuts in a good way, but it was nuts. Like people were getting kind of crazy. There was drinks spilled all over. And no, really nobody was a jerk and had bad intention, but it was such a crazy, fun show that the venue took a little bit of damage at Summer Soiree 1. And so for some reason, after the gig was over, the guy that runs the place, he was on his hands and knees with paper towels scraping – between the crack, not the cracks, the on floor tiles. What do you call the space between the tiles?
Grout.
Yeah, like the grout. Like he was rubbing the grout with paper towels. And Adam and I looked at each other, and we like just started doing the same thing. And we're like looking at each other, and we're like, we don't know what we're supposed to be doing here. Like why are we rubbing the grout with paper towels? And we kept saying to the guy, do you need us to do anything else? And he was like, no, you're good to go. And we could tell, like, he was kind of, like, nerved out. And so at this show, unlike any other shows except for Summer Soiree 1, I'm like, oh, thanks for letting us have the gig, man. Do you need me to do anything? He's like, no, you should be good to go. And I'm like, And I noticed that, like the fire extinguisher got, like, knocked off, like, the wall and stuff. So I did my best to clean up as much as I could. You know, I folded up all the tables. I mopped the floor and everything. I'm like, oh, man, you know. And then eventually I think he kind of warmed up because I was really trying to, like, make things right. You know what I mean? And so I just felt bad. I'm like, well, I'm not coming back here for a while. Or if I do, I'm getting charged. The first time I did World Inferno, I got charged a price. And the next time I did the gig, I got charged a lesser price. But I think now I'm back up to the first price again just because of the audience, you know. So anyways, the bands were awesome, especially Low Budget, especially Crazy in the Brains, especially Froggy. Even the opening band was awesome. They just kind of annoyed me, honestly. And I probably shouldn't say it publicly, but I was annoyed. What can I say? And I don't think they were being ill-intentioned. I just think they could have been better team players. But that being said, that's not what matters. Low Budgets were totally awesome. The audience definitely had a great time with Low Budgets. They definitely got way more than they thought they were going to get. It was just an interesting gig in that, like, I've never been asked to do a gig before. Actually, I have, but I've never been asked by a band to do a gig before. And it was a fun gig, but it was also a very annoying gig. And also, I misfired, and I put a ton of work into my Price is Right game, a ton of work, and people just didn't give a shit. And then that's my fault in that I misjudged my audience. I thought my audience was like me, but my audience was not like me. And that's a big mistake anybody can make, and you have to be smart enough not to make. So that was my big adventure. It was a great show, and I'm glad I did it. It was a fun show, but it was fraught with difficulty, which can happen, you know.
I just like the idea of Joe Jack being like the happiest you've ever seen him.
He really was.
Sounds like it was worth it. Just. Yeah.
So anyways, I guess we'll play some songs and come back and do a little bit of news stories now that I've done my long soliloquy. Let's play some low budget, and that will wrap up the low budget for the next 7 years. We'll do craft fair because not a single person took any of my craft kits. This is craft fair. F you, audience. So let's talk about some news. Let's see. Our first news story of the week is this news story that I had pulled up, but I kind of closed out because I was so enraptured with my own voice. Oh, Blink-182. I know you all talked about Blink. I'm going to go off on a soliloquy. I was going to say more, but I'm going to kick this off. You guys all talked about Blink-182 last week, and I was actually astounded by all your reactions, frankly. And I know Emma likes Blink-182. I think Sam likes Blink-182. I'm not sure where Hallie – I think Hallie was being polite, but listen, people. Blink-182 sucks. That man sucks ass. I mean, that man is not a good fan. I remember when I got into punk, like, when I got into punk back in my day, like, they were considered a joke band, and you wouldn't dare say you were a Blink-182 fan. I realized they were on the radio. But, like if you said you weren't Blink-182, you would be ridiculed to death. And not that popular opinion matters, but it matters here because the popular opinion then, not now, was the correct opinion, that Blink-182 sucks. I don't know how Blink-182 went from being a total joke and laughingstock and totally not cool band to being a band that even the punkers are like, oh, wow, Blink-182 is getting back together, despite the fact that tickets are like $500 or $1,000 or something. And despite the fact that their new song is absolutely terrible, and despite the fact that I think everyone's letting Matt Skiba's paint, I think everyone's giving Blink-182 an easy pass. And I'll tell you why. So of course Matt Skiba had to know his time was limited in Blink-182. And you know, just like when Tim Ripper Owens replaced Rob Halford, or when Blaze Bailey replaced Bruce Dickinson in Iron Maiden, you know it's going to come back around again, and you know you're going to get booted. They could have figured out how to keep him in the band, or at least have him do something, unless maybe he would have felt that that was charity and maybe he wouldn't want it. But I kind of felt they did Skiba kind of dirty, but of course I'm sure he was an at-will employee and not a member of the band at all times. So that's the way things are. But at any rate, I am confounded that people would even spend $600 for Blink-182. And I am confounded that people think Blink-182 is somehow a good band now, which they're totally not. And I'm furious at the punk community for saying, oh, yeah, Off is cool. Then let's go give $600 to Blink-182. Or, oh, yeah, Effed Up is cool. Now let's give $600 to Blink-182. Blink-182 is a terrible, stupid band. And not stupid in a good way. They're stupid in a bad way. And what happened? How did Blink-182 go from being a laughingstock and a joke that no punker would ever salute whatsoever to being a band that gets $600 from the punk community? Any of you can answer. I don't know how you can defend this band. Terrible.
So, I think, John, you're a little bit older than I am. And I think you have to understand that this entire rise of Blink-182 right now is touching people like me in somewhere in the 30s, in the weird 30s, a nostalgia moment, right? Essentially, they became popular, I guess, with the rise of MTV, music videos, things like that. And, you know, the reason why me and my husband, we did not spend $600 on tickets, but, you know, we did get nosebleeds for, you know, close to $100 apiece. But, it, you know, this is one of those, like, time and place things that if you saw them before, then cool, you know. We never were able to see them because we're dirt poor and really young. So it's, you know, we're all, they're kind of like catering to the people now that's much older that now possibly has jobs that could sustain paying about $100 a ticket to go see them. Yeah, so I think that's the thing. And I think there's also the hope. Like, yes, the song is not that great. I would have to say I'm still trying to figure out what the song actually means. I did like the bunnies. I did not like what happened to the bunnies at the end. But it was very, it was shot very well. The video was well put together and it was kind of nice and beautiful and stuff and crisp. But yes, no, the song's not good. But I don't think right now we care about that. I think what we care about is the hope that, you know, the three of them getting back together is going to spark maybe them playing songs of our youth and or everything before Take Off Your Pants and Jacket.
I mean, I'm somewhere in between the two of you guys, right? Like, I did like Blink back in the day, and I remember a lot of people liking them, John. I mean, maybe not like, I don't know, maybe not like crass fans, but like anyone that was into pop punk, like, loved Blink 182. But, you know, this was like, they put that video out and like made this big announcement. The band's getting back together. It's all the original numbers, like this real like we're back, baby, like kind of thing. And then they put out this song. I was like, oh, come on now. It's like, I want to believe that if you are getting your band back together like 25 years past your peak, that it's because you got like some fire in your belly. You got something left that you still feel like you really got to say, or like you feel like you can come back swinging. But this was just like such a like womp womp, right? It was like such a, just like a it sounded like Smash Mouth to me, honestly. It was like fucking terrible. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you told me that a pop punk band that'd been really popular in like the mid 90s, like early aughts, was like getting back together, this is about the level of like, this is about what I would expect. But I was really hoping they would surpass my expectations. Maybe they should just stick to making videos about like their comeback rather than actually doing the comeback. Cause like, I thought that video was actually like legit pretty like funny, but the song, no, thank you.
Well, I think all of their videos are kind of funny, you know, like they're just, yeah, a funny band. Their songs, you know, this song, like I think we discussed this last week, like just the name Edging, it was nowhere in the song. I have no idea why it's called Edging.
I have a theory about that.
Oh, good, Em. What's your theory?
I think they called it Edging because, like, your hopes are so up, right? You're like, this is going to be a great song. They're back together. Woo! And then it's a disappointment. And then I think, like, it doesn't happen.
Well, remember, there's I'm coming.
But I think it's like, what?
I've got a theory, too, that they're a dopey band that isn't that funny. That's my theory. How come everyone's like, oh, Blink-182, they're so funny, I'm coming in. But when Flag of the Dwarves does a comedic and serious masterpiece, people are like, oh, yeah, that's cool. You know? Why? The world is not fair. That's why. That's why. And also, because the human race time and time and time again has proven it's not a race to the top, it's a race to the bottom. Go ahead, Em Moore. Defend this terrible band.
Blink-182, like, come on, man. They're fun. Like, obviously, they have a lot of, like, issues and whatever. But, like, they're having fun. Like, in the video, I love Mark and Tom because I think they work really well together. And they're like, when it's just one, something's missing. They need to be together.
Yes.
So I like seeing them, like, just hanging out and doing their thing. I don't like Travis Barker, but, like, I really like...
Total D-bag, Travis Barker. Total yeah. D-bag.
He didn't have also, a shirt on once in the video.
And if you only knew what I knew, if you only knew what I knew, I will also add... that Travis Barker is a total D-bag. Oh, but if you need to prove that Travis is a D-bag that I am not going to say publicly, but I mean, well, if you need a separate example, watch the Nardwar interview with the transplants and Nardwar interviews Rob, Skinhead Rob, and Travis Barker, and one guy that was that people like I'll just tell you what happened. Everyone hated Skinhead Rob, and I'm not, I guess because he seems a little cheesy, but Skinhead Rob totally got Nardwar and thought he was hilarious and, like, answered his questions, where Travis Barker, like, seemed to feel as though, like Nardwar was challenging him and actually kind of, like, did tough guy poses against Nardwar, which is the most ridiculous thing ever. You know, just because he's an insecure little prick, Travis Barker is. And this is what I was going to say is I realize it's cheesy and stupid to throw around the word poser, but Travis Barker is a poser. He's been posing his entire life, and he keeps posing to the next level, and people keep buying it. You know, I don't know why. Like there's nothing behind him, but he's the Donald Trump of drumming, frankly. Go ahead, Emily.
Donald Trump of drumming.
You know how like old ladies get their if they get their eyebrows like permanently tattooed on, or like they'll get makeup, like if they don't feel like they have the hand control to do makeup anymore, they'll get like makeup just permanently tattooed on. Like I think Travis Barker just thinks like, oh, this is my shirt. Like I got my shirt permanently tattooed on. I like no longer have any obligation to wear a shirt. Sorry, go ahead, Em.
Like tattooed? Because that was one thing, like, I mean, you don't see them, they don't stick out, so now I'm seriously wondering. I thought the video was good. I didn't like the song. I didn't like the song, but the song's really catchy and it's going through my head, so it's like I kind of have to make peace with it because that's my environment now, and I've just accepted it. I've listened to it twice and it will not leave. But like the video is really funny because of Tom's facial expressions. He's just like contorting himself and it's so funny. He's like, look at me, I'm doing like the punk sneer and whatever. Like when he's like, I'm just a punk rock kid or whatever, and it's like, dude, you're 46. But like it was really fun.
I'm
trying to be an alien.
Yes. Yeah, he's trying to communicate.
Speaking of the exact opposite of Blink-182, Panic Shack, which is actually a really, really good band, have released a new video. The video is for the song Meal Deal. Emor, tell us about Panic Shack and Meal Deal.
Yes, Panic Shack are an amazing band. They're out of the UK. They do like post-punk with like pop-punk and all this sort of stuff. I don't know. They're really, really good. You have to listen to them. They just released their EP Baby Shack earlier this month, and it is amazing. It's really good. If you haven't listened to that, go listen to that now. But they just released a new single called Meal Deal, and they released a video for it. So the video, and they also announced their first headlining tour for the UK, which is and Europe, which is really exciting, because it's like, hey, yeah, get some steam, please come over here, please come to Canada, like that'd be so cool. Yeah, the video has the same like DIY feel as like their videos for Mannequin Man and The Ick. So like it shows them shopping at a grocery store to get food, and then it shows them in the studio recording the song, and they're recording like the gang vocals for like Feed Me, and they're eating the food and playing and they're dancing, and it just looks like this studio looks like the best time. It looks really fun. At the end, like with the previous two videos, they do a little like kind of not really a blooper, but kind of like after we film the video, this is what we're doing kind of thing. So they're just sitting around and laughing and eating the food. And I thought that was really fun, too. The song itself is great, and it's catchy, and there's gang vocals, there's distortion, there's a post-punk vibe, but it's leaning more punk. It's like, attacking the price of food and how it's like, oh, cool, I have to pick between eating or paying my electricity bill, but the boss man has it all, like, and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's a song for the times for sure. And it's really good. I'm glad to hear more from the band. I'm glad that they're doing their first headlining tour. That's really exciting. And yeah, I wish them nothing but the best. And I can't wait to hear more from Panic Shack. What did you guys think of the new meal deal?
I had to look up what a meal deal was because, you know, terminology.
Isn't a meal deal when you go to, like, McDonald's or whatever and they give you, like, a burger, a fries, and a soda?
Yeah, it's kind of like a meal package. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cheap.
Yeah. So, like, I was like, meal deal, is that, like, a thing? And then I was like, oh, yeah. They're from the UK. Ah, got it. Yeah, so there was that. I do love me a song about food. So this was definitely, like, up my alley, because, like, I was like, it's weird because sometimes I like to, like, listen to things as I'm cooking. So this fits that bill of me listening to things as I cook, because, you know, I'm trying to prepare a meal or eat. I really love that end piece of them, like, yes, laughing. I thought, like, it was a great addition to, like, the video, only because it really showed, like, the character of the band, you know? Like, it's real. I did also like the video itself. It was, you know, I just like people eating, I guess. I don't know.
I liked it. I didn't like it as well as the ick. But I did like it. Am I being unfair if I say this? It sounded like a little too much like Amyl and the Sniffers to me. Does that seem unfair to you guys? I was a little bit like, oh, this sounds a little bit too much like you're trying to be this other band. Where I had not thought that about their previous stuff. You know, it was just this track particularly, just kind of like, I don't know. It kept kind of distracting me because I was like, oh, this just doesn't sound authentically like this band. It sounds like it's trying to be this other thing. But I like these women. I think they're funny. I like what they do. John, were you into this?
Yeah, I think Panic Shack is, I agree that the ick is a little bit better and a little bit funnier, but I mean, not every track has to be a 10 out of 10.
Damn, you shished me in the cinema. You shished me in the cinema. So good.
I wonder if we are all falling prey to this band just because they're English, so they use English. Like, we would say movie theater or movies, and they're like, cinema. And you're like, ha, 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 cinema. What a word, you know? So maybe we just like this band a little bit more because they're English, but I think this band is real cool. I dig them. I would definitely come see them. They do have an EP on vinyl, but it's like super expensive because it's sold out. So it's like $70 for like used. So anyways, I hope they repress it. I think they're real cool. Something that Sam Barrett thinks is real cool. War on Christmas is back. This year it's Brendan Kelly, The Falcon, The Dopamines. And let's see, who else? Neil Hennessy, Josh Carter, Hermy the Elf. Who's that? Is that Sam Barrett? Tight Wire and Won't Stay Dead. However, there's no Lawrence Arms. Sam Barrett, are you excited for this? Are you sad there's no Lawrence Arms? Have you ever been to a War on Xmas? I think you have, right?
No, I have never gone to a War on Xmas. I don't think it is quite a War on Xmas without Lawrence Arms. I guess I'll just take Brendan Kelly and Neil. I do think that it's this lineup is not as good as the other ones, because this is like the eighth one. I did look up the lineups for 4, 5, and 1, and I was like, oh, those are the ones that I would have probably went to. I do think that this is like, it's 2 nights instead of like 3 nights, and you know, the bands are way less. The intriguing thing is Hermy the Misfit Elf. I have no idea who that is. I wonder if it's me. I don't know. If I end up in Chicago, I'll let you know. But I'm not planning on being there as Sam Barrett. We'll see what happens.
And more, do you care about Lawrence Arms and those bands? You do not care at all?
I really like the Lawrence Arms. I think they're really good. It was on a podcast. We were talking about it a while ago, and Adam mentioned like a song. So I listened to it and I was like, oh, shoot, this is actually really good because I liked the song we were talking about that week. And then like I kind of fell down like the rabbit hole. So I really like Lawrence Arms, and I don't know or don't or actively dislike the rest of the bands on the bill. Like, I've never listened to The Falcon. People are really excited about that. I think that's great. But I don't have a basis for that band. I do not like Tight Wire. And the rest of them I haven't listened to. I hope Hermie the Elf is Sam, because that would be really fun. And I love the flyer for this so much. It's like Jesus and Santa, like Godzilla size, getting ready to fight. And it's really funny. I like it. I like the...
Do you guys know what this image is an homage to?
No.
It's an homage to the early 80s video game Rampage.
Oh, cool.
That makes so much sense.
And the Rampage original art is very similar to this.
Well, I would have to say that a lot of their flyers for all eight of them are really good. Like, whoever's doing the graphics for this is doing a good job.
Any commentary on War on Xmas?
I like the Falcon. I've seen the Falcon before. That was fun. I guess that'd be cool. But yeah, I'm mostly indifferent to this. I think let's make a wager. I say Hermie the Misfit Elf is going to be Chris. You know, it's going to be the other guy from Lawrence Arms who's not playing solo. It's going to be Chris.
I like that one. That's good.
I agree. Let's see here. We just got a couple more stories to hit. And actually, one thing I wanted to talk about that I didn't put on our thing. Let's see here. One last story and then one other. Anyway, Slaughterhouse has got a new track out. Slaughterhouse is an LA band, and they are cool. And they actually opened the Leftover Crack Architects of Self-Destruction book release show. Their new song is called Halloween. It's a little bit different than their earlier stuff. It's kind of a little more gothy, a little more... what's the band that had that song Party Time? And they also covered Schools Out. What band is that? I'll look it up. So anyways, Hallie Blue, I know you played Slaughterhouse before. Did you dig Halloween by Slaughterhouse?
Yeah, I mean, I like the gothy kind of new wave. I liked all kinds of stuff like that. I wish this song didn't grab me, but yeah, I like this band. I don't know. It was just, I sound like a radio, like I sound like a major label executive. I didn't hear the hook, but I don't hear the hook, but I like this band. I think their sound is cool. Did you like it, John?
The band I'm thinking of, the singer's dying of cancer. 45 Grave. Oh. That's the band I'm thinking of. It sounded a lot like 45 Grave. I thought it was...
I know that band. Would I like them?
I mean, honestly, like 45 Grave is one of the early, I believe they're San Francisco, but they might be LA, punk bands that were actually very much the American Susie Sue and the Banshees, except for the song. If you ask me, the songs just aren't quite there. You can check them out. They've got one album called Sleep in Safety. It's all right. I mean, people say it's a classic, but I kind of think it's considered a classic just because they were there at the time. And I think if they had come out, like, say, 5 or 6 years later, people would say, oh, it's fine. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to be mean. Yeah. I'm trying to be honest.
Yeah, sure. No, I asked you. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you can go gothy. Was this your thing?
I thought this was great because it's all about Michael Myers. And what they're doing is they're taking the John Carpenter score and they're making it like they're kind of twisting it and making it a little more like punk, a little more goth. They're twisting it into it, which I really liked because it's like, hey, that sounds so familiar. And I was like, oh, my God, it is. So it's very similar to the score, which is awesome.
That's awesome. I kind of missed that.
Yeah, like at the beginning, like it's through the whole thing, but like it's so cool because those movies are so good. They're so good because they're so good, but like especially because of the music. Like when like in the first one, when like everyone thinks they're safe and then they look out the window, it's like, where'd he go? Like, it's great. It's awesome. And the lyrics were all like, the lyrics were all about Halloween and Michael Myers, which is fun. I liked those movies. The new one's coming out soon. I'm not caught up. I can't watch it yet, which I'm disappointed about, but it looks really good. Jamie Lee Curtis is just a gem, like, honestly.
Isn't so, she though? Oh my God, can we talk about her in her in that fucking Everything Everywhere All at Once?
Oh my God. That was so good.
That's the performance. I've heard good things. Funny. Yeah, she's amazing.
The fingers.
Oh my God, the hot dog fingers.
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
You just have to see it.
You have to watch it.
Yeah.
Jamie Lee Curtis and the hot dog fingers. It's so fucking great.
Oh my God.
But yeah, no, Em, you need to narrate like creepy books, like audiobooks, yes, in that voice, okay? That's your new job.
I would. If anyone wants to pay me, I will do it. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Sam, did you like Slaughterhouse?
So I hate like thrillers or like creepy movies. So normally when it comes to like creepy songs, I'm not like about. So this kind of falls into the meh. It's a little too creepy vibes for me. You know, well, happy things.
Yeah. But one last thing that I didn't put on the schedule is today there was big news with regards to Punk Rock Bowling. As the listeners probably know, there is, and that, well, actually, this is speculation, but it's speculation supported by circumstantial evidence, is there appears to be big conflict between the two Stern brothers in that Sean Stern broke off from Punk Rock Bowling and went and did Destination Chaos. I'm not sure how well that's doing because it's pretty expensive and I'm still getting a lot of ads for it. And every week it's like, oh, this week we'll take 10% off your booking fees. And this week we'll take 10% off your, you know, resort fees or whatever. And it's like they keep doing all these deals. So it was a broad stroke and a big move. I'm just not sure that it's making the impact he had hoped it would make. I could be wrong. This is just me going off the number of ads that I see that I'm getting and the fact that it was really expensive and the fact that it was really hard to figure out exactly how expensive it was. It was like figuring out what Destination Chaos cost was like paying Dungeons and Dragons. It's like, do you want to go through door A, B, C, or D? It's like, C. Now you've got four charts here. What reference the chart that applies to you. I'm chart two, you know. Now you have to go down the column and see where you – it was really, really hard to figure out what it costs. So anyways, that's Destination Chaos. That means Punk Rock Bowling is now Mark Stern, I think. I hope I didn't swap it. Maybe I don't think I did, but I might have. So anyways, today for the first time ever, Punk Rock Bowling did blind ticket sales. That is, Punk Rock Bowling is going to be Memorial Day weekend 2023. And they, for the first time ever, they did early bird tickets, but you don't know who the act is going to be. I believe the festival that started that whole thing is buying tickets before you even know who's playing was Coachella. I think they were the first big thing to do that. And discounted tickets were actually really, really cheap, $140. And the other thing is, though, is Punk Rock Bowling this year will not be where it has been for the previous number of years. It's going to be where it first was, in the parking lot at 6th and 6th Street, some other street, Stewart Street. And the reason that that's kind of a big deal is the quote newer place where it has been in the previous number of years, kind of, even though it's a parking lot, it is built, it's really built for like music festivals. They've got like this fake grass they roll out. They've got these big tents they build. And that, frankly, it's very comfortable. It's easy to get out of the sun. If there's no in and out to Punk Rock Bowling, which I think is a bad move. But so, you know, if you want to get out of the heat for a while, if you want to relax for a while, you can go find a spot where it's kind of easy to relax, if you will. I'm not sure I think the new spot is just a straight up parking lot, much like Maryland Death Fest or Punk Rock Bowling Asbury Park, which, Sam, you remember when we went to Punk Rock Bowling Asbury Park and it was like really, really hot and like people were in the Stone Pony just basically like dying, basically. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I'm always at the Stone Pony, like, dying every summer, so,
so anyway,
it's literally sunblock and hats.
Now, I don't know. I think Punk Rock Bowling hopefully they will just kind of modify the area, like the other spot, and put down the fake grass and put up the big tents. I really hope they do. But interestingly, in the punk rock bowling community group on Facebook, people were kind of complaining, like people always do. And actually, let me look it up right now. I think it was Mark Stern actually got in there and was like arguing with people. And honestly, me more than anybody, I can understand the compulsion to do that. It's like, you know, I put a lot of money up for this. I'm working really hard. Like, this is a lot of work, and I'm doing it for you. Although honestly, like, you know, Mark Stern isn't necessarily altruistic. He's making a lot of money off it, but it is a cool event. But it's like, you know, I've worked on this all year, and the first thing you people do is complain, and, you know, and so I can understand his frustration. That being said, it's never a good look, man. You know, a month later, you go back and look, you're like, oh, why did I weed into these, you know, why did I wade into these weeds, you know? And so he was arguing with people in the comments section. I don't know if that was a great move. But I will say is I did buy a blind ticket because it was $140. And they do – last time Punk Rock Bowling sold out, so it was really easy to unload your ticket if you weren't going to use it. I gambled this time. I'm like, listen, I'm probably going to go, even though I don't know. Sean Stern runs Punk Rock Bowling now. Mark Stern runs Destination Chaos. I bought a ticket, and then after I bought a ticket, they're like, oh, it's at the different spot now. I also booked my hotel. And, of course, I don't get paid anything by – and this hotel doesn't even know exists. El Cortez, my hotel of choice. I love El Cortez. Listen, people, book El Cortez, book the tower. It is awesome. It is so luxurious, and it's only – well, I only paid $40 a night. Don't make the mistake and accidentally book the pavilion, which is cheaper, which I did once. And like the pavilion is like a roach motel, and I'm like, oh, my. I was so upset. I went to the counter. I'm like, can you do anything for me, man? Can you do anything for me? And they just – for like 30 more books, they put me back in the tower, and the tower is awesome. The room is great. You're right in the middle of Fremont Street. You can look out your window and see like everything happening downtown. It's like just such an awesome feeling. Not that I spend a lot of time in the hotel room, but at something like Punk Rock Bowling where you're out for 12, 14, 16, 18 hours. It is nice to come back to a place that's clean, nice, and is relaxing. I love El Cortez. So anyways, I saw that the venue wasn't the old venue. It's somewhere else. I'm like, oh, man, that sucks. Maybe I made the wrong spot. Well, what do you know? The, quote, new venue is literally right next to El Cortez, best hotel. Meanwhile, Punk Rock Bowling is like, book the Golden Nugget. Everyone should go to the Golden Nugget. The Golden Nugget is great. No, go to El Cortez. It is great, but book now because their dynamic pricing has not caught up with the influx of registrations. So book your hotel now. If you cancel any time before 48 hours, you get all your – you don't have to pay anything. You don't pay till you get there, but if you cancel ahead of time, they don't even care. So I don't know why everyone just doesn't book their hotel as soon as they can. If you don't go, just unbook it. So anyways, Punk Rock Bowling is happening. I've got my ticket. For the first time ever, it was blind sales. I hope it's a cool act, and I booked my favorite place to stay in Las Vegas, El Cortez. It's the best. So we'll see what happens. Hallie Bullitt, do you have any general thoughts on Punk Rock Bowling's blind ticket sale? Because, of course, this time Punk Rock Bowling is a little bit up in the air, and that there wasn't a Punk Rock Bowling last year. Everyone thought there was going to be. Plus, Mark Stern is gone. Mark Stern was the booker for Punk Rock Bowling. So maybe this year it might suck, or it might be awesome because they got something to prove. What do you think, Hallie Bullitt? And what do you think of El Cortez, the best hotel in Las Vegas?
I don't know. I mean, I've never been to one, so it's like I'd still like to go. I still think it'd be cool. I guess I guess because you've gone so much and you have like other experiences to compare it to. I don't know. I still think it'd be cool to go, and I would stay at El Cortez.
I honestly should write out where it doesn't ask them to like pay me money like an influencer or something. Like every year for the past 3 years, I talk about how awesome El Cortez is. But I love El Cortez. Everyone goes to the Golden Nugget or the one down the street from the Golden Nugget. But A, they're actually kind of like off. Like those hotels are so gigantic, you're like actually out of the action. El Cortez is right in the action, and it's cheaper. And at Golden Nugget and the other hotel with the citrus deck with the pool on the top of the roof, that's cool. But, like, those hotel rooms are just, like, normal hotel rooms, where El Cortez is, like, a Las Vegas hotel room with all these fancy things. And, well, some of the room in El Cortez is, like, state-of-the-art, like super fancy. Like, you walk in, and it's like, hello, John. I hope you have a relaxing sleep, you know? Or the other hand is, like, from the 40s. It's, like it's got, like, brass handles, like stand-up mirrors, like, all these old couches from, like, 1932. So, like, El Cortez really is the best. Sammy B., would you buy a blind ticket to Punk Rock Bowling or any festival? And would you say El Cortez? Which is literally one block away from the best Mexican place in Las Vegas on Fremont Street. If you're on Fremont Street, there's a Mexican place that doesn't even have a name. It doesn't even say food on the front. You just gotta walk in, and it is absolutely, absolutely delicious. But people, when you're there at 3 a.m. and you're waiting in line, don't be a dickhead and just leave your trash on the table like 75% of the people do. The trash can is right there. Throw it in the trash can. Don't be disrespectful. Like I don't know why people love the power trip and like just leave the trash on the table when the trash can is right there. It's clear it's not the kind of place where a waitress or waiter comes to you. You buy it at the counter and you take it to your table and you throw it out. Sammy B, why do people love to leave the trash on the table? It's rude, thoughtless, and like, what are you trying to prove to people? I don't know what that proves. It proves you're a dickhead.
Because some people are slobs, okay?
Is it that they're so thoughtless they don't even think of it? Like you know how like, you can like lock your door and not even think about it? Is it like that automatic? Or deep down, are they saying to themselves, I'm a big shot, so I'm just going to leave my trash here and let someone else clean it up? Like, what's the mentality?
I think it's a combination of things, and I think sometimes people are slobs. So, you know, sometimes you just need a call out bullshit, and that might be a call out bullshit moment.
honestly, I recommend that people don't call up. Like my one friend, I don't even know why, he watches these crazy, crazy videos of, and like, the whole extent of something to like my friend group, like, check out this video. And I think it's going to be like a dog skateboarding or something. And it's like two guys like beating the shit out of each other. It's like, listen, like, you can. Like, the people doing that are drunk assholes, and they might throw a punch, and you might beat them up, but, like, you know what, you're there to have fun. Don't ruin your fun. And I realize that if you always take that approach, then the dickheads rule the world. But in Las Vegas, when you're having fun, you know, just be the bigger person and throw it away. Like I've had times where I wanted to – in that situation where you want to confront someone, say, don't be a dickhead. Like, these people are working real hard. Why are you making their life harder? Why are you making – you know, but, like, so what? You get in a fight. You're getting in a shouting match. No one's going to – like, they're not going to be like, you're right. I am being a dickhead. I should have thrown my trash away. They're just going to – they know they're idiots, and they're just going to be idiots and, you know, start a fight or walk away or whatever. In that situation, I just say, take one for the team. You're in Vegas. You're having fun. Just throw it away yourself and – lead by example, not by punishment. But I agree with you, Sam. I definitely do want to inflict punishment on a lot of people a lot of the time.
Well,
I thought about this a lot, Sam. A lot.
I figured you have, and I hope you don't actually need to do that. But, you know, it seems like that really pissed you off while you were in Vegas.
I'm gonna put it on the table, and I mean this as the place is run by people of Mexican descent, and honestly, a lot of people are slobs there. A lot of people are, and I don't know why. But last time I was there was like four or five Mexican guys that were dressed like sharp, and like they literally like made a total mess. And I'm thinking like I thought them, of all people, would be respectful of the Mexican people working behind the counter, and they were the worst. You know, but then again, maybe it's not even like a race thing. Maybe it's a class thing. You know what I mean? Like, maybe they say, oh, we're rich guys, and there are, quote, poor people working back there, so we can do what we want. And not that the Mexican guys were the only rude guys there. A lot of people there were rude, but I was just surprised at how they literally, like, just, like, dumped, like, hot sauce on the table and just, like, left it. And I'm like, how disrespectful, but... You know, maybe it's not a race thing. Maybe it's a class thing, you know. Not everything is a race thing, I guess. I don't know. Those are just the thoughts that I had.
Well, I would have to say, if you go back to this restaurant, please bring Clorox wipes.
Yeah, you should. I mean, I feel bad for the people. Like, just like I was cleaning the bathroom at Filomoka because people felt the need to trash the bathroom like they always do. I feel so bad that these people are making these delicious Mexican delights and people are trashing the place. No, you should be respecting this place. They make the best food in the city. Like, why aren't you respecting them? I can't fathom it. And more. Can you fathom it? And would you go to a festival blindly without knowing what the acts are going to be?
Well, first of all, Mexican delights sound wonderful. And I think that anybody who disrespects people in the service industry, that's a mark of a bad person. And you avoid that person like the plague. And if you can fling them into the sun, you fling them into the sun. because that, like, you're leaving your DNA. You're like, here, clean up my spit. Like, that's disgusting. So treat people with respect.
And more, do you think, Sam touched on this, do you think it's the people being literally thoughtless and that they don't even think about throwing away their trash? Or is it sort of a flex when they just leave their trash all over the table, which is great? I mean, honestly, like, I love Mexican food, but Mexican food is among the least pleasant food to look at after someone's done with it, if you know what I mean. You know what I mean?
So
what is the mindset? What do you think?
Well, like, that's the thing. I don't know, because, like, how were you raised that you think that's okay? How do you live that you think that's, like, automatically, like, yeah, I'm going to leave my shit on the table and I'm going to walk away and do nothing? Like, what possessed you to do that? Like, why? That doesn't make sense. Things that are so automatic to people, like, locking your door. Yeah, 100%. Get it. Do that all the time. But, like, no, you don't leave, like, a mess. If I'm eating in a restaurant, I don't care where it is. If I move something from the table, it goes back to the section where it was found. If I spill something, I wipe it up. Like, it's not their job. I mean, like, okay, it's their job in a sense. But, like,
technically
it is their job. But, like, you don't be, like, an entitled asshole about it, you know? I think it's a class thing.
Fair enough. And more, last comment, we'll shut this bad boy on down. Would you go to a festival? Would you buy a ticket blindly, which I just did for $140?
I think if it was a festival that I kind of have an idea of, like, I've never been to Punk Rock Bowling, but their lineups seem really, really good. And there's always, like, a lot of bands that I'd love to go see who are playing there. So I think it would be a safe bet. And, yeah, I would buy a ticket blindly for Punk Rock Bowling. But if it was for just, like, a festival that I never heard of, I wouldn't.
Fair enough. Well, anybody have any last comments before we shut this on down? And what should we play as we sail out today's episode?
Well, I don't know if it's what you want to play, but my only comment would be I'm really liking that new Tegan and Sarah. Did you check that out, John?
Yeah.
You know,
I haven't, and I should.
I'm a little annoyed at Tegan and Sarah, but I'm wrong to be. I'm annoyed because I thought Heartthrob was great. And then I actually thought their album after that, where they re-recorded all their teenage stuff, was great. But they put out that acoustic album, and they put out their memoir, and like I felt like we're all dwelling on Tegan and Sarah too much. How about the music as opposed to your background? But I should definitely check it. I love Tegan and Sarah. I haven't listened to it, and I should. So I'm in the wrong.
I think you're gonna like it. This single, it's Smoking Weed Alone. My kid was like tapping his toe along to it. It's like super catchy. It's great.
Did any of you guys go see Tegan and Sarah when they did the pop tour, where they did it as like a pop act as opposed to a folk or a rock act?
Yeah.
Was it awesome?
Yeah, I saw them at South by that year. It was good. It was really fun. It was like, unfortunately, like, I don't know why I think I talked about this on the podcast. It was like the venue was like a third full, which made it like somehow sad. But I'm like looking at what they're doing in the stage show and the aesthetics and everything, just like in a packed venue, it would have been killer. It would have been amazing.
Yeah, that's the tour I really regret not going to, was Tegan and Sarah do pop. But you can't catch them all, but you sure can regret it. Anyways, thanks for listening. You can reach the podcast at podcast.org. And this is Tegan and Sarah doing Smoking Weed Alone, a song that will take John from being trepidatious about Tegan and Sarah to being a roaring Tegan and Sarah fan. Once again, this is Tegan and Sarah, and we'll see you next week.
Smoking weed alone, I'm in the woods. Wonder if I'll get clean again. Running down the street, it's just a dream. Think I need to wake up again. 'Cause the light, yeah, the light.